And from American Jewish World Service, pursuing global justice through grassroots change at ajws.org. From Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy. And from the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Christoph Waltz talks about starring in Quentin Tarantino's new film, Django Unchained. Waltz won an Oscar as well as a Golden Globe, BAFTA, and SAG Award for his portrayal of the Nazi SS officer Hans Landa in Tarantino's previous film, Inglourious Basterds. Join us.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Seasonal changes may cause muscle strains and sprains. Ron's Apothecary carries a selection of resources for recovery. First aid kits, healing ointments, braces, and more. Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall.
Looking for something fun to do with kids? The Valley Public Library hosts Family Time the third Thursday of each month. In December, the Teddy Bears have their picnic on Thursday, December 20th at 5:30. Bring your favorite teddy or another stuffed friend for a light supper, crafts, stories, and songs. This event is free and for families and starts at 5:30, sponsored by the Friends of the Juneau Public Library.
Good afternoon and welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. It is 3 o'clock right here on KTOO FM 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. This is Katie Bosler, your Monday host. I want to let you know that the weather today is pretty clear out there, to partly cloudy with lows overnight to 11 degrees. Gusts up to 35 miles per hour downtown Juneau and Douglas in the evening, so getting a little windy. As always, it seems like when the skies clear up around here in the wintertime anyway, by tomorrow, partly cloudy skies with highs around 24 degrees and the winds decreasing somewhat, but increasing again Tuesday night. That's just kind of the way it is, right? All right, here's National Native News, and then we will hear from our guests.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A recent Canadian federal court decision on the sale of former military barracks in Manitoba is being hailed as a victory by First Nations. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the court ruled the federal government did not properly consult with First Nations on the sale of the former base.
The judge's ruling blocks the federal government's planned sale of the Kapyong Barracks. The court said that Ottawa was wrong to begin the sale of a section of the property without talking to four First Nations communities which have outstanding land entitlements from a treaty dating back to 1871. Aboriginal leaders claim they own the land and want to turn it into a residential and commercial development site in order to create jobs. In his ruling, the judge used strong language, calling the government egregious in not consulting with First Nations, adding that it did not fulfill its obligations, it did not disclose relevant information, and did not respond to meaningful concerns. Glenn Hudson is the chief of the Peguis First Nation, one of the four bands involved in the decision.
The court ruling, I think, certainly is a strong one. It reiterates our position that we need to be consulted, we need to be accommodated in terms of anything dealing with our rights.
Hudson says the Native communities would still like to talk to the government about how the land will be used. The government said it is studying the ruling. The Kapyong Barracks was abandoned by the military in 2004. In 2007, the Canadian government decided to sell the former base to a government redevelopment agency. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A lawsuit challenging the tribal membership status of descendants of slaves held by members of the Cherokee Nation has been allowed to move ahead. KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports.
The Cherokee freedmen say they're looking forward to having a court consider their attempt to reclaim membership in the tribe. On Friday, a federal appeals court said the descendants of former slaves owned by Cherokee tribal members can sue the current chief for the restoration of full tribal rights. plaintiff, Marilyn Vann, says she believes a judge will order the Cherokees to restore rights to the 2,800 freedmen descendants. The freedmen claimed they were promised citizenship under an 1866 treaty. The Cherokee spokesman says that in order to be a citizen of an Indian tribe, a person must be an Indian. In its ruling, the Federal Court for the District of Columbia upheld the Cherokee Nation's status as a sovereign entity, but said the freedmen can sue the chief in an effort to reclaim their citizenship. Cherokee Attorney General Todd Hembree says he was glad for the reaffirmation of tribal sovereignty, but he also says the case will now basically have to start over because the initial judge has retired. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Courtney.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs has started a campaign to prevent impaired driving during the holidays. The Don't Shatter the Dream mobilization effort began Friday and will continue through January 1st. The BIA is teaming up with tribal law enforcement agencies. Officers will be on alert, conducting checkpoints and patrols. This is the eighth year the BIA has worked with tribal law enforcement personnel to set up enhanced enforcement on federal Indian lands. According to federal statistics, Native Americans are killed and injured at crash rates 2 to 3 times higher than the national average. In 2009, a total of 440 Native Americans were killed in motor vehicle traffic crashes across the country. Of those, 47% of the fatalities occurred in alcohol-impaired driving crashes with the driver's blood alcohol content at or above the legal limit of intoxication. The effort aims to reduce motor vehicle crash injuries and fatalities. Happy birthday, Native radio station KIDE. On December 16, 1980, the Hoopa Valley Indian tribally owned and operated radio station went on the air. Located in Hoopa, California, its mission is to promote and project Hoopa tribal culture. The station's programming includes music, news, and information. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
On KTOO FM 104.3 right here in Juneau, Alaska. This is Katie Bosler, and I have a few guests today. Kim Kiefer is our first one in the house, the city manager. At 3:15 or thereabouts, we'll hear about a movie tonight, a special film showing of Christmas in the Trenches with K.J. Metcalf. And the half hour, 3:30 or so, Junior Senior Center will bring Carol Camoli and Marion Mills. And at 3:45, we'll hear about a GIS class being offered at UAS in the spring 2013 from Bruce Simonson. And now here is our city manager, Kim Kiefer. Thanks for being here, Kim.
Thank you.
So there's an assembly meeting tonight. I guess, I imagine, the last one before the holidays?
It is. Correct. It's at 7 o'clock at the assembly chambers.
What's happening?
Well, the assembly kicks it off by having a couple special orders of business, which they have been doing more and more to recognize both CBJ employees as well as citizens. And so tonight there will be recognizing, they'll have a proclamation honoring Robert Bob Thibodeau. They also will have a proclamation that recognizes all the volunteers that assisted with the Gastineau fire. And then they will be recognizing Terry Hinckley, who is our Parks and Recreation Land Supervisor that will be retiring. And thanks to Terry, he's provided the beautiful flowers and the medians and baskets and hanging baskets around town for a lot of years, as well as made sure all the lawns were mowed and parks taken care of. So we wish him well on his retirement, and so they'll recognize him. And then we've got the consent agenda, a number of different grants that are being introduced as part of that consent agenda, some transfers into capital improvement projects. There's a transfer to put some money into a CIP for the back loop road to look at the waterline replacement back there as part of the DOT project. So we want to make sure that we coincide those two projects together mm-hmm. so that we don't have them do all their work and then we come back in and dig up their nice new pavement. So we really try to work together with them as they do projects. And the other transfer is to put some money into a CIP project to work on the transit plan, which is basically to look at what our system currently does with the money we have, with the number of buses that we have, and what the riders and community wants for different routes. How can we achieve that? And is it doing what we're doing now? Is it rerouting things? How to look at that? And so that's what that transit plan will do. And that will be about a year-long process to go through all that.
So that transit plan is just starting then?
It's just starting, right. And this transfers the money into that so that we can then go out with a request for a proposal, hire the people to come in and do the workforce and work with staff on it. So people should be seeing a lot more about that in the next probably won't start for public input for another 3 to 4 months once we get the request for proposals, score those, get somebody on board, and then they'll start that public process piece of it.
And they'll start polling the public?
Okay. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. What are people looking for? Where do we want to go that we can't go? There's been a lot of discussion about trying to provide transit service on Riverside Drive mm-hmm. because of all the increased use at Diamond Park and the new facilities
Maybe
there.
Maybe the ferry terminal airport?
Ferry terminal is one that's been talked about as well, trying to get it out there and how to coincide with when the ferries come in is always the challenge there.
I just see those poor people kind of straggling along the
I
road
know.
With their backpacks.
I know.
Or rolling their suitcases on Glacier Highway.
I know. Whoever thought about rolling suitcases, boy, they were ahead of the game on that one. There are also some liquor license renewals that the Assembly will look at, and that's part of the consent agenda. And then there's a couple different ordinances appropriating funding that we've received from the state for a project for some grant funding from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Homeland Security, to be able to purchase some equipment as well as provide some training for staff for emergency response operations. We received some money from the National Endowment of Humanities for the Juno Douglas City Museum, and that will help them with their capital improvement project and the remodel project that they're working on right now. The school district is asked to put $50,000 of interest from the Harborview Elementary School project into a new Mendenhall River Community School renovation. Mendenhall River hasn't had any major renovations since they had a new roof put on earlier in 2000. Actually, I think it was right about 2000. And so they're looking at other things to make that building more energy efficient. And so that $50,000 will help begin that process. And then the final ordinance up for hearing tonight is to approve the general obligation bonds that the voters voted on in October. So basically just say, yes, you can go ahead and put those out for $25 million. We'll need to come back to the Assembly with a resolution once we actually have determined what the amount is going to be and when that sales will be. And so that probably will happen in February or so. But this is just the general one that we need to have approval to go out and work on that. And then one thing of interest, I think, for a lot of residents is the Assembly will look at a liquor license protest. And people have probably heard in the news about Peterson Pacific Holdings, i.e. Louis.
Yes. In Douglas,
correct. Old Louis, Douglas Inn. And they, the Assembly protested to the ABC board, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, about issuing the license to them, alcohol license
to
them.
So this would be a reissue?
And this is a 6 month, so they do a yearly, and we appealed. We protested when they had it 6 months ago.
Okay.
We're going to recommend to the Assembly that they protest the 6 month cycle as well.
This is because of the taxes because not being paid?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And so my recommendation to the Assembly is that we go ahead and protest the continuation of this beverage license for Louis Douglas Inn because of the outstanding taxes that they owe the city. And that's separate from the court case that already happened. It's whether or not they can have a license to sell alcohol appealing.
They've had a license for quite a long time.
They have had a license for a long time.
Any idea how long?
I don't know.
Wow.
How long? It's been a long time. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so when. So if that's not if that goes through the protest, what would be the next steps, and when would yeah?
Well, we actually took there was an administrative hearing. The law judge met with the city attorney, and they had a hearing on our appeal 6 months ago for the permit, and we're waiting still for that case to be, it's under consideration, and we're waiting for that decision to find out what the law judge agrees to or not. And if the appeal is denied, then it goes back to the ABC board to decide whether or not to take the license. If that doesn't happen, then it most likely will be back before the ABC board in February. So we're just saying,
okay.
We've done the process we went through already with the administrative law judge. He's working on his decision. But just so we stay current with our protests, we want to make sure that we get in that mid-cycle, that six-month protest. So that's what this is. And so we may have the judge in our favor, find in our favor, but we don't know that. So mm-hmm. we just want to make sure we go through every part that we can at this point.
So the Douglas Inn, though, will still have their license over the holidays.
They will.
Okay.
Yes.
Just checking. I thought there might be some listeners wondering.
No. The ABC board will let them know, and I'm sure you'll hear about it if the ABC board decides to pull it. But I don't know what kind of time frame they give on that process.
You know, there's just one corner bar in Douglas.
I know. Yeah.
There's one on the water, too, but, you know. and just going way back to the the honors tonight mm-hmm. for people retiring, for example, mm-hmm. Terry Hinckley. He's done a wonderful job over many years with our beautiful medians and hanging baskets and out at the airport. I know, you know, mm-hmm. Juno's a real show place. Mm-hmm. My father's a landscape architect, so he has pretty high standards, and he's been very impressed every time he's come to visit.
Oh, great.
Any idea who will be stepping into Terry's shoes?
I don't. I haven't heard. I think it was posted, and I believe it was an internal employee-only post, so I don't know where they are in that selection process at this point.
Okay. Well, I do have another question for you, and I think it's something that some people are wondering about after the horrible atrocity that just mm-hmm. occurred in Newtown, Connecticut, mm-hmm. and that is, I guess, the Planning Committee Commission approved clearing the way for a private shooting range near the airport. And according to the Empire article in a way, it's where people could be able to fire machine guns and other automatic weapons, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'm just kind of wondering what are the next steps for a business like that to come into operation? And are there any more approvals that would be needed by someone who wanted to start a shooting range of this nature?
So what the Planning Commission does is they look at the city code and they look at what they call a table of permissible uses. And that says what can be used in what zones in the community. So they looked at this facility and looked at the zoning for that facility. It was zoned to have a facility that would draw people to it, that would have extra parking needs, et cetera.
Parking needs?
Well, yeah. Because anytime you have a facility that requires any kind of recreation type facility or mm-hmm. facility that draws people to it, then you need to make sure you have the parking requirements met around the area. And lots of times the parking takes up a lot of square footage. So mm-hmm. can you fit all the parking needs into it? Then there's vegetative cover that's also required depending upon where you are. Mm-hmm. And so what the Planning Commission does, they don't look at the business necessarily that goes in a building. For instance, if somebody came in and wanted to build a liquor store someplace, the Planning Commission wouldn't ask questions about how do you make sure somebody underage doesn't come into this building, because that's an operational piece, that's not a building piece. So the Planning Commission doesn't look necessarily, unless there's some things within the operation that require something different. Like in this case, I think there was some need to identify how they were going to deal with the lead and also probably some ventilation issues because of that. But they don't get into the specifics of allowing what kind of guns would be able to be used in that facility. That's so not a requirement of the Planning Commission.
So there is no policy or oversight for that kind of thing?
There isn't from the Planning Commission. I do not know if there will be required to have some other certification right now, if you go and buy a gun, you have to register it. You have to go through all that. I don't know what the requirements that they will have for this facility from somebody else, but it's not through the city to do that.
Because it sounds like the plan is for a 13,000 square foot indoor shooting range that would be in a gun store beyond the corner of Crest Street and Yandukun Drive. And, this would be a place where people could rent an automatic weapon, have a handler show them how to use it properly, and fire off these things, which, are pretty scary weapons to a lot of people. And it just seems sort of a bit alarming that this kind of thing could actually, be installed in the capital city.
Well, and right now there are a number of shooting ranges already in Juneau. There's the shooting range on Montana Creek, an indoor range. There's an outdoor shotgun range.
Aren't those more like rifle ranges that are for people who want to practice target practice for hunting?
They can be for anything. I think the range, Hank Harmon, I think goes out 500 feet out, so that's quite a ways.
But it doesn't allow automatic weapons,
right? Long range. I don't know what the requirements are there, and I don't know what the indoor range is either. But there's three ranges off of Montana Creek right now. The piece that the assembly did do, they passed, it was probably 6 weeks or so ago, is they made a change in being able to have an indoor range within 1/4 mile of a road, as long as it was consistent with the table of permissible uses. And once again, that talks about what kind of use can happen in what kind of area. But it doesn't talk about what kind of weapons are used and what kind of guns are used in that area.
So is there any kind of a public comment period related to this? Or?
No, the Planning Commission made the decision on last Tuesday night, I believe. There was no notice for reconsideration at that, so that stands. As with all Planning Commission conditional use permits, somebody can appeal it. There's 20 days from when that notice of decision is signed, and I believe that notice of decision was signed on Friday, but I'm not positive. So they would need to check with the city clerk's office to find out if they wanted to appeal that process, how to go about it. And there's also clear definition of what qualifies for an appeal. And because you can't just appeal because you don't like it, it's got to be tied to something. And so the definition of that you can get from the city clerk's office as well. Or you can call my office and I can give you the link to that.
Okay. So being tied to something is kind of complex. There's a special definition for that.
It's got to be the code. It can't be, I just don't want this here. It's got to be, there's got to be a reason why you're appealing it, and the reasons for that are clearly outlined in code.
I see. Okay. So city clerk or your office is a place to get that information.
Correct.
Okay. And it sounds like there's less than 20 days now, but there is some time if somebody wanted to look
right.
that up.
Right. And you can look it up too off of Juneau.org and then go to city clerk. There's a section on the left-hand side that talks about appeals, so you can look it up there as well.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for that information. Really
sure.
appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you want to add that's happening with the city? Sounds like there's plenty of things to be dealt with and approved before the end of the year.
Yep, there are a few things. I just want to remind people that a number of facilities probably will be on holiday schedules over the next couple weeks, so make sure you check out Juneau.org for the most up-to-date information on that. I encourage people to be safe out there. I know our streets crews are doing a great job trying to keep the sidewalks and roads open for people, and everything the public can do to help us is much appreciated, especially getting, as we talked about the last time I was here, getting things out of the right of way so both streets can get through as well as emergency vehicles. We want people to be able to get to where they need to, especially in an emergency. So I wish everybody happy holidays. And remember, by the end of this week, the light will start to come back.
Oh, yes.
Flipping over because we hit winter solstice on Friday. So
we sure do.
Be able to start looking forward to longer days.
Well, thanks for the reminder, Kim Kiefer. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 17th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of Erskine Caldwell, born in Moreland, Georgia, 1903. Father was an itinerant Presbyterian preacher. He lived in a series of poor rural communities in the South. Erskine Caldwell said, "I wrote about what I had seen, but nothing I put down on paper succeeded in conveying the full meaning of poverty and hopelessness and degradation as I had observed it." His two most famous books, published back-to-back, 1932 and 1933, Tobacco Road and God's Little Acre. It's the birthday of the novelist Penelope Fitzgerald, born in Lincoln, England, 1916. Family was literary but not well-to-do. The study was the only warm room in the house. She said, "I was brought up in a journalist's home and in a family where everyone was publishing or about to publish something." She didn't start writing a novel until she was 58 years old. Her husband was dying of cancer, and she thought that writing a novel with him would be a way to keep him entertained. The novel was The Golden Child. It came out in 1977, the year after he died. She went on to write 8 more, including Offshore, which won the Booker Prize in 1979. Penelope Fitzgerald, who said, "I believe that people should write biographies only about people they love or understand or both. Novels, on the other hand, are often better if they're about people the writer doesn't like very much." It's the birthday of the Hmong writer, Khao Kalia Yang, born in Ban Vanai refugee camp in Thailand in 1980. Family moved to this country when she was 6. She wrote a memoir about growing up Hmong in America called The Late Homecomer. And it was on this day in 1892, Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Ballet premiered at the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg. The production was a huge failure with both critics and audience. Tchaikovsky died less than a year later, had no idea that The Nutcracker would become a classic, one of the most popular ballets ever. Here's a poem for today by Jim Harrison, entitled Bridge. "Most of my life was spent building a bridge out over the sea, but the sea was too wide, and it didn't go any place. I'm proud of the bridge hanging in the pure sea air. Machado came for a visit, and we sat on the end of the bridge, which was his idea. Now that I'm old, the work goes slowly, but the material keeps coming as I hang here in the air. Ever nearer death, I like it out here, high above the sea, bundled up for the Arctic storms of late fall. The resounding crash and moan of the sea, the 100-foot depth of the green troughs. Sometimes the sea roars and howls like the animal it is, a continent wide and alive. What beauty in this, the darkest music, which imitates the sky's thunder, over which you can hear the lightest music of human behavior, the tender connection between men and galaxies. So I sit on the edge, wagging my feet above the abyss, the fatal plummet. Tonight, the moon will be in my lap. This is my job, to study the universe from my bridge. I have the sky, the sea, the faint green streak of Canadian forest on the far shore." A poem by Jim Harrison, entitled Bridge, used here by permission of the poet on the Writer's Almanac. Written by Betsy Allister, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Why, thank you, Garrison. And speaking of that, with me in the studio is KJ Metcalf from Juneau People for Peace and Justice, and he is here to tell us about a special holiday-oriented film and discussion event happening this evening.
Well, Katie, it's very pleasurable to be here, and Juneau People for Peace and Justice are inviting folks to come to Northern Light Church this evening, 5:15 to 6:15 or 6:30 or whenever conversation runs out. We're going to look at a historical short film done by the History Channel of the 1914 kind of unofficial armistice that occurred between the British and the French and the Scots with the Germans in World War One, and it's an extraordinary event where both sides were tired of fighting and they came together in no man's land, 100 yards or so that existed between the two lines of trenches, and celebrated Christmas and began to know one another's story and who they were. And so we're going to look at about a 20-minute film and then just have conversation about what allowed that to happen. And what does that tell us about how we deal with people today, and particularly in conflicts?
Yes, and I think a lot of listeners are familiar with the story from the John McCutcheon song. John McCutcheon's a pretty just sort of popular artist who's been heard on the K3 stations for many years. Do you know any more details about it as far as exactly where it was or?
Well, yeah. The Germans, when they started to, when World War One started in 1914, they were sweeping out of Germany down into France through Belgium, and they were sure that the war would be over, that they would take France by Christmas, but they didn't count on such heavy resistance from the French, and then the British came into the fray, and so they ground to a halt, and they had these trenches that they dug in, and it was just horrible conditions. Water a couple of feet deep in the bottom of the trenches. The water table was very high, and they had, by the time this all ended, several years later, they had 600 miles of trenches from the North Sea clear to Switzerland, and that's not only one trench, but that's double trenches. Each side had their trench.
And the soldiers just lived in there and got trench foot and all kinds of awful stuff.
Oh, yeah. They had huge casualties from the weather and from trench foot and from just unimaginably bad conditions. I had two uncles that fought in that war. And while I never knew them, I talked to my mother. She lived to be 101. And she was telling me that they would never talk about their time in the trenches because the only thing they would say is that it's too horrible to even describe. And they talk about the two brothers were in the trenches together, side by side. And one day they had a charge where they would charge out towards the German trenches. And one of the brothers was shot and fell. And the other brother stopped to help him. And an officer came up and stuck a gun into his ribs and said, "You can't help him, even if he's your brother, because your job is to kill Germans." And this was after this truce, several years when the U.S. entered the war. But the fact that this truce occurred just shook up the upper echelons of the military on both sides, and they had very harsh penalties for people coming together and fraternizing with the enemy. Mm-hmm. And it just isn't the way you fight wars, and they couldn't tolerate that. So they, some of the people who did that were sent off to the Eastern Front, to the Russian side. The people were taken from their buddies so that they couldn't talk about this anymore. And
the Christmas truce you're talking about?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
So yeah. It just had a lot of repercussions. And so they had to then, both sides had to ramp up their propaganda and demonize the enemy more. And you had to make it so that you wanted to kill the other side. And that was kind of the core, spirit that they had to create. And then if you decided you wanted to talk to them, make the penalty so harsh, like being killed, that you wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But it's a remarkable thing that both sides at that Christmas in 1914 came out of their trenches, came together.
And played soccer and exchanged cigarettes.
Shared a bottle of brandy, cigarettes, cigars, showed each other pictures of their families, and together buried the dead. There were the ground in between was just littered with bodies. Mm. And so they took that opportunity to bury their dead, and they did it together.
Yes. Wow. That's quite a story. And so the History Channel, I guess, has done a short documentary on this?
That's right. And so we're using that this evening and then having conversation afterwards. So folks are invited. We'll have some coffee and tea, maybe some cookies. Who knows?
And it's going to take place?
At Northern Light United Church.
Northern Light United Church, 515.
515 to 615 or thereabouts.
Okay, well, it sounds like a really great event. And I'm just getting back to the brothers.
Oh, my uncles, yeah.
Yeah, so they both survived?
Yes.
Oh, my
gosh.
But
they would never talk about it, she said.
Yeah.
And they were both gassed, which mustard gas, became a weapon later in the war. And they were both gassed and had serious problems and died at an early age.
Wow, what an absolute tragedy. Gosh. Well, just probably didn't want to go back there, no matter they didn't want to talk about it. And of course, the people separate from the Christmas truth were ordered not to talk about it.
That's right.
And then you have this song by John McCutcheon. You have the stories, and people are talking about it now. And that's what you want to do tonight, is get the community talking about
this.
That's right. All right. Well, KJ, anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that's fine. And I hope folks listen to that song. It's an amazing song.
Well, we have it right here.
Right.
All right. Happy holidays, everybody.
2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. To Belgium and to Flanders, to Germany to hear. I fought for king and country I loved dear. 'Twas Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. Frozen fields of France were still, no Christmas song was sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day, their brave and glorious lads so far away. I was lying with my messmate on the cold and rocky ground, when across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, me boys, each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. He's singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent, and the gas cloud rolled no more. Christmas brought us respite from the war. As soon as they were finished and a reverent pause was spent, God rest ye merry gentlemen struck up some lads from Kent. Oh, the next they sang was Stille Nacht, 'tis silent night, says I, and in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, the frontline sentry cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure trudging from their side. His truce flag like a Christmas star shone on that plain so bright, as he bravely strode unarmed into the night. Then one by one on either side walked in the no man's land. With neither gun nor bayonet we met there hand to hand. We shared some secret brandy and wished each other well. In a flare-lit soccer game, we gave him hell.
faded chocolates, cigarettes, and photographs from home. These sons and fathers far away from families of their own. Young Sanders played his squeeze box and they had a violin. This curious and unlikely band of men. Soon daylight stole upon us, and France was France once more. With sad farewells we each began to settle back to war. But the question haunted every heart that lived that wondrous night. Whose family have I fixed within my sights? It was Christmas in the trenches, where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were warmed as songs of peace were sung. For the walls they'd kept between us to exact the work of war had been crumbled and were gone forevermore. Oh, my name is Francis Tolliver, in Liverpool I dwell. Each Christmas comes since World War I, I've learned its lessons well. But the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame. And on each end of the rifle, we're the same.
John McCutcheon with Christmas in the Trenches, Water from Another Time. And again, 5:15, the short documentary film Christmas in the Trenches will be shown at Northern Light Church, and then there will be a discussion after that, coffee and tea, sponsored by Juno People for Peace and Justice. This is Katie Bosler and your host of A Juno Afternoon on Monday. Today, at this time, I have Marion Mills, the Director for Southeast Senior Services, along with Carol Camoli, the Manager of the Juno Senior Center, here with me in the studio. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Good to have you both here. And the Juno Senior Center is a place that the community is welcome.
Yes. Everyone over 60.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit just generally about the Senior Center, what happens there.
Well, the Senior Center is open to the public, anybody over 60. I have had phone calls asking about certain events. Are they just for residents? Because we share a building with Mountain View Apartments. Mm. We don't actually have residents. The Senior Center is open to everyone in Juneau over 60.
Great.
And so, of course, it's open. We have, every day, we have a lunch program. Starts about noon. Free hot lunch or a goodwill donation, a free will donation. And they have twice a week the same thing going on in Douglas. We send food there. So if that's closer for seniors, they're welcome to go to Douglas on Tuesday and Thursday. Same thing, a free will donation. So for a good hot lunch.
So you say a free will donation, that's just come on down?
Yes, it means we have a grant to supplement our budget, but it supplements what we hope to get in donations.
I see.
It's free will, because if you don't have
$5
to donate for lunch, you don't have to. You're welcome to come to lunch.
Right. Like,
yes, anyone can eat
pay,
there.
Pay as you can or can't.
Exactly. Pay as you can or can't.
Okay. Now, I imagine there's some things going on for the holidays.
Well, today we had Santa Claus there, and he'll be at the Douglas Center on Thursday. We have some carolers coming in. The Juno Youth Services, the young men there have made cookies. They're going to bring those over.
Great.
We always try to have something going on, music, live music sometimes. Just have to stop in at lunchtime and find out what we have going on. We have activities every month. We have ceramics class going on from 10 to 2. There are folks that get together and play bridge every Monday and Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and newcomers are welcome. We have low vision support groups the second Tuesday of every month, and we have a diabetic support group. We have a foot clinic that's free every other month, and we have free pedicures every Friday.
Okay. Well, who knew? You're going to get a lot of takers for that.
A lot of phone calls. The senior center has...
Do you have to make an appointment for a pedicure?
Oh, you definitely have to make an appointment. And right now, we're probably booked into January.
Okay.
It's very popular, but it's free. And Brian Lubro is doing the pedicures, and he's wonderful.
Oh,
and
yes.
And people are just raving about him.
Oh, yes. How
so
wonderful.
Another big activity we have a grant for... health, basically, and what we've chosen to promote really good health for our seniors is Tai Chi.
Mm.
And so there are going to be free Tai Chi classes starting in January. Mm-hmm. There are 15 slots, 8 are gone, so we have a few left. People just have to call me to get registered. And
okay, what's the number to register for Tai Chi or get a pedicure
or
whatever?
I'm going to be sorry for this. My number is 463-6175.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 463-6175. Okay, mm-hmm. So you're located near the Mountain View Apartments in Juneau.
Right, in the same building right there at 895 West 12th.
And where in Douglas? I didn't realize there was a space in
Douglas.
They
meet at the Douglas Methodist Church.
Okay. And the hours are?
I think they just meet for lunch twice a week.
Okay.
And that's pretty much all they do.
And how about the hours for the one downtown here?
Well, we have different things going on at different times, but the building's actually open. They can come in, read some books, whatever they like.
But it's a
from
day.
From 9 to 4.
9 to 4. So it's a day use facility.
Right, yes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes, and I'd like to see people come in and do more activities. One lady would like to play Mahjong.
Mm.
We're trying to get people to call me to set up a group for that. Mm-hmm. Book clubs would be welcome, any kind of activities.
But this is a place that people come for an hour or two or a few a day.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
Hang out and sit and read a book.
Uh-huh.
Some people
uh-huh.
come for lunch and then they just stay and talk.
Uh-huh.
But on top of all the things that the Senior Center offers, one of the best things we offer is an opportunity for volunteer work. If anyone's interested in helping us, we have wonderful people that deliver Meals on Wheels to 100 people mm-hmm. every day. But substitute drivers, we're really in need of substitute drivers or even a regular route. If anyone's interested in doing that, they should call Zach Hosed, and his number is 463-6179. We also would love to have anyone in the community that's interested serve on our advisory board to help us with fundraisers and so on. We have enough people now for a quorum, but... more people are always welcome for that. Again, just call me, same number.
And the number again is?
463-6175.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and are there any specific holiday needs for volunteers?
Specific holiday needs?
Like if there's a holiday, I don't know, event or craft session or something like
no,
that?
No, there's no special need for that. Mm-hmm. There are some volunteers, some people from AELMP that have mm-hmm. put out the word. I gave them a list of people who need things for Christmas, and they're doing all of that work. So there are some really wonderful volunteer people out there doing things.
Okay.
In addition to having cookies made, we have people out there mm-hmm. buying birthday presents for people. So I think we're covered for the holidays.
Okay, but the bottom line is there's opportunities for volunteers all year and the
always,
need for volunteers.
Yes, we do. When we have fundraisers, we can always use help.
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
So.
Well, is there anything you'd like
Mary
to
Ann
add?
Knows all kinds of things I haven't mentioned.
Well, that sounds great, Carol. The main thing that I would emphasize is our need for Meals on Wheels delivery volunteers.
Okay.
And again, if someone's interested in learning more about being a volunteer, to call Zach at 463-6179. And then the other big news is this new grant we have for fall prevention and health promotion, which is a free Tai Chi class for people over the age of 60. And that class will start in early January. But there is a limited number of slots available, so they should call Carol at 463-6175 if they're interested in signing up for Tai Chi.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having
really
us.
Really appreciate it. And, happy holidays.
You too.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Although the town of Homer is in southern Alaska, no one would ever think of it as southern on this midwinter day. The temperature is well below freezing, and flurries of snow dance in the blustery wind. This is a place for rugged birders and the even tougher birds they seek. So, let's put on heavy parkas and head on to Homer Spit, on the longest road into ocean waters anywhere in the world. We'll watch in particular for rock sandpipers feeding along the gravelly shore. These small gray shorebirds run or walk this way and that, probing into the gravel and seaweed. Anything that moves is fair game, especially amphipods, the little crustaceans that hop about when exposed. But the birds also recognize clams, snails, and barnacles as tasty food. Gulls, waterfowl, and many other birds forage along the spit, but rock sandpipers are the only shorebirds. Their dense feather coat extends down their legs almost to the ankle, affording some protection from the cold. How do we know exactly which birds winter on Homer Spit? Well, one way is through the annual Christmas Bird Count sponsored by National Audubon. These counts go on all over the country. You don't have to be an expert to join one. Just bring your binoculars and your curiosity. To find one near you, begin at birdnote.org.
And welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is your Monday host, Katie Bosler, and with me in the studio is Bruce Simonson. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Alaska Southeast, and he is here to tell us about a course that is being offered for the spring 2013 semester that he is teaching. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Well, good to have you here. So tell us about this course.
Well, it's the second of a two-course sequence, so this is the Advanced Geographic Information Systems class. It's an interesting class. I've been in this field for, gosh, longer than I care to admit, but maybe 25 years with this kind of software technology.
So this is GIS technology?
GIS, yeah. And think of it as like Google Maps, but on steroids. That's kind of the way it works. People are pretty familiar with Google Maps. Many folks are, I think. But what this does is lets you take it from kind of what I think is the toy aspect of Google Maps into more of a tool. And there are many professions, especially in a resource-intensive state like we have here in Alaska, that really need access to this kind of technology. It's creating maps electronically and doing analysis with the data that's associated with those maps.
So how is it different from Google Maps? I mean, how is it on steroids?
Well, you certainly have much more control of the kinds of data that you can overlay and what you can do with the data once they are incorporated in the map. Plus, you can control the accuracy. Oftentimes in Google Maps, the things just don't line up properly, and there's nothing you can do about that. Whereas with a good GIS tool, you can take mediation steps and things like that to get things corrected and at least do analysis to figure out what went wrong.
So this is software. It's really learning how to master this software.
That's correct. And it's pretty – lots of different features and those sorts of things. People probably know Excel. They've heard of that program. And if you have dinged around in Excel and learned some of the more advanced features in Excel, this class you might actually be qualified to take it if you have a need for mapping. There is a prerequisite. Certainly students who've taken the first semester are eligible for the class. But, you know, I used to work for Fish and Game for a decade and back in the oil spill days, and this is when mapping really sort of hit the forefront within state agencies. And there are, you know, it's not a week or two goes by where I don't have a call from some state agency where they're asking me, well, how do you do this kind of data, or do you have this available, that sort of thing.
Okay, and you work for the city.
Oh, yeah, right. I now work for the city. Worked there for, 10 years, something like that, where I do the electronic mapping for the city and also a lot of database work, too, which is part and parcel of what you do with this kind of software. You need to be able to work with data sets and figure out how to map them.
Right. And I, working in this field now for, 25 years, I mean, I guess it goes without saying that the changes have been mind-boggling.
It's really interesting. It's very true. Certainly, people's awareness of what you can do with maps on computers has certainly become much more prevalent with Google Maps and Google Earth, that kind of thing. Back in the early days, though, it was always a struggle to figure out how you can do proximity analysis, like how close is that oil spill really to the city of Cordova, those kinds of questions, and what happens when the wind and currents move and all that sort of stuff. These things have certainly been on the research arena for a long time. And now with the software, I was going to say the interesting thing is that the company that's really most prevalent in this industry is called ESRI, Environmental Science Research Institute. That software has been around for 25 years, and it's improved and gone through various iterations. And this particular product that the university teaches is that the ESRI product. And it's a good thing, actually, because some of that software is pretty expensive. And if you're interested in some of the modules, the university has access to all the modules, which cost additional. And it gives you a chance to try those things out and see if they really are appropriate for what you need to do within, you know, your state job or whatever it is you're doing. Yeah.
So this is offered through the geology department?
It is in the geology department. It's also cross-linked with the environmental science department. So if you're pursuing a degree in either one of those disciplines, then this would be an appropriate class.
Okay. So if you're in the degree program or if you are a professional working in these fields for state, federal government, it would be a good class. And there was an introductory class last semester.
Yep.
But is that necessary to have taken that in order to enroll in this advanced course?
I think that people should try to get in touch with me to see if they have enough background. I know a lot of people dabble in this. The software is out there in the state in some departments. And whether they're comfortable jumping in, I think is really a function of how comfortable they are with working with other software packages.
Okay.
If they're not intimidated by learning new things with software, then I think you can get into this class. And, you know, the first 3 weeks will be pretty wild because there's whole new kinds of language and stuff to learn. But I think you get the hang of it. If you have facility with software, I think you'd be fine without taking the first semester class.
Okay. And when is the class being offered?
It starts the 15th of January, so it's next January, and it's a Tuesday night and a Thursday night. It starts at 5:15, runs for 2 hours-ish, and there's lab work, too, so that you can stay and continue and finish your assignments during that time.
Okay, and if people want to get in touch with you, if they have any questions, how would they contact you?
You know, I have an email account at the university, and that's probably the one that would be best because then it won't get lost in the swarms of other email I do. My email account there is, like my name, B. Simon Sun, except there's no N on the end of it. I guess they ran out of N's in their type Okay. There, but be Simon So at uas.alaska.edu. And if that doesn't work, you can always go online and find a link to all professors in the classes that they're offering.
Right.
Through
just
the
go to the UAS
schedule.
Directory. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then if people want to register, they could either go to the website.
That's the way I think it's done. Mm-hmm. It's just uas.alaska.edu and look for the section called course catalog. That'll get you started there. Or you can call the registrar's office, which is, what, 796-6100.
Yes. Okay. Anything you want to add, Bruce?
Nothing other than I think that this is a class for people who really have been dabbling in it. And, I should say that there aren't that many spots left. So people ought to sort of jump in there and make sure they get their name in the hat.
Okay.
Want to make sure to do that. But it is an opportunity. If I were in this business 10 years ago, this would be a class I would definitely jump on because it gives access to tools that you may not have at your desk. So.
Right, that people are using like anything these days.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, well, thanks so much for coming in.
Katie, thank you.
You are listening to KTOO FM 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. This has been a Juneau Afternoon, and thank you for listening, everybody, to the program today. I've been hosting Mondays for, a while now, and want to let you know this will be my last Monday. Got a day job, just got a little hectic, but at 5 o'clock I do have my volunteer, Karen N., host of Monday Tideline. Today, a very special Tideline, the All Rolling Stones, featuring Keith Richards' memoir. It's 4 o'clock, and here's All Things Considered.
We'll paint a crystal clear picture as much as we possibly can, but it is a slow process. It's not something that just is done in 60 minutes, as you see on TV.
The investigation in Newtown, Connecticut continues.
It's Monday, December 17th, and this is All Things Considered.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, the latest from Newtown and the challenge facing school systems all around the country.
Our social workers and our school psychologists are really stepping up. They're disseminating really good information to teachers.
The Senate seat vacated by South Carolina's retiring Jim DeMint will be filled by Congressman Tim Scott.
He's Republican, he's black, he's very conservative, and he's popular with anti-tax groups.
You can take all the revenue from the top 2%, and you simply could not close the annual deficit.
Those stories after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Senator Daniel Inouye of Hawaii has died, the longest-serving member of the Senate. The 88-year-old died of respiratory complications late today at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. As Bill Dorman of Hawaii